Do you sell stuff on Amazon, eBay, BigCommerce, your own website? Then you need ShipStation, a popular choice of online sellers across Australia. No matter where you sell, ShipStation automatically imports your orders, making them easier to manage. Plus, they help you get the lowest rates from all the top carriers, including Australia Post. Now you can try ShipStation free for 30 days. Plus, get a special bonus when you use the code SHIPPING. To learn more, go to ShipStation.com, click on the microphone and enter shipping.
On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
No one kind of has a go at the authorities that much, do they?
Do have a bone to pick with you.
Stop. It's always about me.
Probably in the past 24 hours moved into the background.
What on earth is he talking about?
Oh, he's talking about the media.
Oh, that's what I thought was most impressive about his victory.
Talk it through your pocket.
So back
again.
The runner-up.
It's an interesting point you bring up there, and I raised it with...
Absolute folly of track walkers is being highlighted by all these issues at the moment.
The leader had gone off so quick, and it had actually burnt off for the pursuers.
You know, the upside is enormous as to how far he can get.
But all I'm saying, Sam, is that I'm not having a go at the professionalism of the track walkers. I'm just saying that...
Hang on.
Force the owner into the back of a car and drive off in the other direction.
Welcome to The Verdict. Maddie Stewart, Mickey Lynch in the studio. Good morning, gents. How was your weekend?
Oh, yeah, pretty good. Enjoyed it. Lovely weather down here in Melbourne and a beautiful place to be at the races, although sadly not that many seem to agree with us given the numbers that attended at Flemington.
It is a worry, the decline in on-course patrons, and I guess it's just easy to watch at home, but what can they do to arrest it, Matty?
I think there's an explainable reason. There's an explanation for it that makes sense. The joint's half a construction site.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
And so the members haven't got a home. The members' lawn was this little... It was like, you know, those little petting zoos that you get at kids' parties. There's a little cordoned off. So there's 33,000 members of the VRC. They've sort of displaced at the moment, really, aren't they? So, I mean, you know, so... I think it's a natural assumption the crowd's going to be down if the members are so displaced. The other thing, too, is I wonder whether the diluting of the Flemington Carnival to three Saturdays might just be too much of a watering down at this time of year.
Well, what race was missing from yesterday, then, that has been diluted? I mean, what
there was a time where the Guineas, the Cup and the Newmarket were all on the same day.
What, back in the Stone Ages?
No, there was, in my career, that occurred. Oh, so, yes. You know, look, put it this way. What has predominantly been a two-week carnival is now a three-week carnival. So, and Caulfield, we spoke about this last week. The thing that you never thought you'd say in the autumn is that Caulfield has the premier autumn meeting, that it's always been Flemington because they had Super Saturday and it was indisputable. But the meeting we had at Caulfield last Saturday, Diamond, Futurity, St. George, Oakley Plate, will be the premier autumn meeting. So I think the VRC has to think about how far they can spread it thin and if they want to retain the dominant spot in the autumn.
It'll be interesting to see if they get a bigger crowd next week because there's going to be a special man on course. The Magic Man.
Yeah, well, you'd have to think so after his extraordinary performance.
But Lynchy's there every Saturday.
I am, actually, yes.
Well, the Magic Man, he's riding Flying Artie in the Newmarket. He's already picked up Tally in the Australian Cup, and he's got, I think he's got six other rides. If he doesn't have a full book, there'll be something wrong because the performance last night, we're going to talk about the weekend's racing in Australia, but we've got to start with Joe Marrera. It was phenomenal. Eight winners. That's the second time in his career he's ridden eight winners. Let's have a listen to the last race, the closing stages, and then a grab from Joe Marrera after he rode his eight.
Prawn Barber, a wave of the wand, a puff of smoke, and the Magic Man pulls one out of the hat and makes it eight.
Racing Pulse with Michael Felgate.
The feeling that I'm having particularly now, it's just so special. I would never think that I would ride eight winners in a day in Hong Kong. In particular, as we all know that how tough it is to ride winners in Hong Kong, where the handicap system makes the races be very even, and you know, we've got so many good jockeys in town. So I think today has to share the top spot of my best day at races.
There he is. He's such a humble champion. And we spoke to Tommy Berry before 9 o'clock. He said he is the racing's gentleman of jockeys. Hats Aiken is one man who knows him extremely well. He's the editor of the South China Morning Post. And Hats, welcome to Racing Pulse. What a remarkable performance. How has it been received over in Hong Kong?
And when did you become editor of the South China Morning Post and not just the chief racing writer?
I can't wait to look at my bank account at the end of the week and see how much I'm getting paid with the pay rise.
Oh, well, sorry. I've given you a bit of a promo.
And a bearded wonder.
Sorry, Hats, to bring you back down to earth, but what was that like?
He is just a rock star. And it's a great thing that you touch on is on how humble he is, his attitude to it all. 7 days earlier, he walked out of the races. He hadn't ridden a winner on the day, and it was the first meeting in Hong Kong Joe had ridden at for, well, since early April last year, where he walked out without a winner. And we told him that, and his attitude is so positive and so good, and he looked at all the press guys and he went, wow, that's a great record. He didn't drop his bundle or say, oh, well, you know, I had no luck on this and no luck on that. All he was doing was going, gee, that's pretty good.
It's impossible to imagine before Marira that a jockey could have such an impact on the status of a racing jurisdiction and the vibe and all that sort of stuff and the excitement around it. It's just, it's not fathomable. But with Marira, his cut through is just so unprecedented in what he's done for Hong Kong racing.
In 2004, Matty, Douglas White was the first to ride 100 winners. There were 700 races that year, and we thought at the time that was absolute domination. Now, this season, we will have just over 800 races. Joe looks like he's on the way to riding 200 winners. It's absolutely ridiculous how dominant he is.
Hats, is he the best jockey in the world? He's certainly formidable in Hong Kong and Singapore, and he's done it in Australia. Does he have to go and conquer Europe, ride big winners in England and France and America, as, say, Ryan Moore has done, to absolutely cement his status, or is what he's doing in this part of the world sufficient?
Well, I think what he's doing is sufficient. But the first part of your question, that's only about opportunity. If he gets a call to go and ride in big races in Europe, he will win big races in Europe or America or anywhere he goes.
How come that hasn't happened as yet on that level?
Well, I don't know. It happens a lot between Australia and Hong Kong, but and you know we get Ryan Moore coming in for big races here, but it doesn't seem to happen the other way.
Is he seen by the Europeans as difficult to get? I mean, Hong Kong's very insular in many ways. Do they sort of, is he out of sight, out of mind, and do they just think, oh, well, he's contracted over there, it's just going to be too hard to get him on a regular basis?
Look, I can't say why it doesn't happen. He did have a brief stint in France quite some time ago before Singapore, and I don't think he did particularly well, but he says that he basically couldn't speak to anyone. He couldn't speak French. At that time, he didn't have a lot of English. So getting good rides was really problematical. And as he says himself, it's all about the horse.
As you say, though, he's phenomenal there and here. Is he trying actively now that his status has gone up and up and up to kind of use that down period in Hong Kong in the northern summer to really kind of make a splash in Europe?
Well, he hasn't attempted it yet. He has had the same kind of impact. In fact, I would suggest that when he goes to Japan, he has an even bigger impact than he has here. His strike rate there is just unbelievable.
What's his impact on crowds
maybe
and
that's
turnover?
An opportunity for him.
Yeah. What the real figures that we can attach to his impact? Like, are crowds up because of him? Is betting up because of him? Is general interest up because of him?
Well, crowds and turnover are up anyway. If Joe has a meeting of suspension where he's not there, we still get higher turnover. The crowds are still up. It doesn't seem to make that much difference. Even yesterday, when I thought there might have been a real spike in turnover, because we get a lot of people in Hong Kong, they like to back jockeys in all-ups. So, obviously, everyone who took Joe in all-ups yesterday would have at least had a couple of winners to reinvest. But the turnover was only up a little bit, maybe, you know, 50 million Hong Kong, which is probably less than standard. maybe the turnover goes up more when he's not winning, because we do believe there are people in Hong Kong who martingale his rides. Because he so rarely leaves without a ride, they just double up all day until he rides a winner.
What were the odds of his win? Was he on roughies?
I was going to say, Alan, I've looked at these odds. I mean, they weren't sort of all back screamingly into odds on, were they? There were a couple that were shade of odds on, but I think his penultimate winner even went round about 6 or 7 to 1, didn't it?
Yes, it did, and I think if he hadn't been riding winners, it would have gone round double that.
Oh, right.
It was a nice double figures chance in the race. But, the last winner, Prawn Barbar, he was probably going to go round at $5, and he went round at 3.1. So it does have an impact on prices. Whether it has an impact on actual betting, there's nothing to suggest that the betting increases because of it. But he's certainly a talking point, a lightning rod, if you like, for attention on Hong Kong racing. And just to correct you, it's his third time riding 8 winners in a day. So he's not even fazed by it. He did it once in Brazil, once in Singapore, where he rode the last 8 and then rode the first one the next day. So 9 in a row. And then yesterday. So 3 times in his life he's ridden 8 in a day.
It is phenomenal. Wow. Unbelievable. Hats, great to have a chat to you now.
Just a quick one, Ree, the beard issue.
Yes, you're looking very cleanly shaved.
Well, I'm just prepping. Along. When's the Derby and what odds is this thing?
The Derby is 2 weeks from now, yesterday fortnight.
14 days and, for something to go my way, yep.
Any market that I can find seems to have Pakistan Star as second favourite, round about $7.
I saw him third favourite. What we're referring to is a ridiculous side bet that we engaged in where I bet that he wouldn't... I thought I was betting that he wouldn't win the Derby, but looking at the fine print, it was that he wouldn't run one of the favourites in the Derby, Pakistan Star. So you've got to give me something. But he's got to run either favourite or second favourite, OK? He can't be an $8 third favourite.
Look, I don't want to go all lawyerish on you, but I think the wording of the
all lawyered up
was that he goes around as one of the chances. Now, in my estimation,
all right, well, a chance
Dominic Byrne on or someone to correct me if I'm wrong, but that means 10 to 1 or under.
Well, I think
so
we need to
get around third favourite.
Look, Matty's not doing too well in the romance stakes at the moment, so he needs to try things. So maybe the beard might make him look a little more distinguished.
Exactly.
The Ryan Gosling look. Yeah, I can go.
Fix it up. Go for the beatnik look.
Good on your hats.
Cheers, boys.
It is a remarkable record, Jay Moreira, isn't it? And if you had a $5 all-up, it's been tweeted out by Dave Stanley from Sky, if you had a $5 all-up on the Aussie tote on his 8 winners... 150,000.
Well, you know what it is? It's almost a subconscious love of Joe Moreira because of the story and of his story. He grew up in poverty in Brazil, and we've told this before, that he used to jump out the window in the middle of the night and steal ponies with his mates, ride them all around the neighbourhood, deposit them back like a good citizen, and then jump back into bed. And there's not a whiff of scandal. When you think about the beauty of Moreira, you think about his relationship with the horse, you don't think about gambling necessarily when you think of Joe Moreira. So
it is interesting, though. We don't tend to think of Brazil as a hotbed of racing, do we? But South American jockeys have done ever so well for decades in the United States. And even in Europe, Sylvester D'Souza is at least a twice-time English champion jockey, former Godolphin retained riders. So there's obviously something there.
I know what you're saying for global recognition, and I wonder whether the only little thing that will stop him being internationally regarded as the greatest jockey of the modern era is that he has been... this is like an outpost down here to North America and Europe,
yeah, exactly.
And including Hong Kong. So I think... And the knock on Hong Kong is that it's a fishbowl of repetitive racing and repetitive dominance. So I love to see him... being the great jockey who rides at Breeders'
now,
Cups,
yeah,
at ARC meetings.
Yeah,
and all
I would
stuff.
Love to see him now.
He does it here in Australia as well.
Down period, isn't there, in Hong Kong in that off-season in the northern summer. So I'd just love to see him base himself at Newmarket or Shanty or somewhere and just go, bang, I'm gonna try and win King George's.
He has to do that.
He might win a Newmarket this Saturday on Flying Artie. We're going to take our first break. On the other side, we'll discuss the Melbourne races and also Sydney races from a huge weekend.
Opinions. Everyone's got one. On RSN 927's The Verdict.
Plenty of racing to discuss. Keep your tweets and SMSs coming through on the VRC. Got a tweet coming through that the VRC's got the worst betting ring in Australia. Been to a funeral parlour with better atmosphere. As a member, I've complained many times. Now, I'm not sure if that's because of the construction, Matty.
Yeah, I've got a... every time I go to Flemington these days, there's a group of bookies who corral me as I walk past. They call it Manus Island out the back there of the construction area. This is an issue because none of the bookies want to be really identified because they don't want to be seen to be targeted in some way. But there's no public toilets out there. There's no food. There's no bar open. It's a construction site with little through traffic as the race meeting goes ahead. There's a lawn that's full of people. Yeah, the bookies don't quite understand why during this construction they're put in a place where they feel off, way off Broadway. You know what I mean? So, and every time I walk past them, they all go, well, nothing's changed. Mm-hmm. So on their behalf, I'm happy to say to the VRC now, can you take their concern seriously?
And look to move them into a more populated area while the construction's
up. They're up in arms. They're aghast.
A few more SMSs coming through. Great to see the Magic Man coming back this weekend. I didn't get to see this race, but boys, can you please spend the entire hour talking about the diabolical ride of Glenn Smith on the $1.28 favourite at Ascot in race two. It was the ride of a kid having his first ride, disgraceful, worthy of a long suspension. That's from the punter's friend. Unfortunately, I'll have to go back and have a look at the replay. I didn't see that, but I'm tipping it got beaten in unlucky circumstances. A few more other SMSs that have been coming through. Any idea if they're going to bring down Hartnell for the Australian Cup? Can you look into it? Thanks from Sir Boom. Well, he's not coming. He's staying in Sydney, so you can forget about Hartnell in the Australian Cup this Saturday. Speaking of the Australian Cup coming up on the weekend, we'll discuss that in more depth in a moment, but let's look back on last Saturday, and the feature was the Group 1 Australian Guineas. There was a lot of talk in the lead-up about Haydock. He was heavily backed. A bit of pressure on Luke Curry. It was a beautiful ride. We spoke to Tony McAvoy in the first half hour, but I think the man who felt the most pressure heading into the race was one of the part owners, who we all know very well, Patrick Smith, who is one of the leading journalists from The Australian. Good morning, Patrick. How are you on this lovely Monday?
Good, Michael. You've rung at a very inconvenient time. I'm just looking at the replay for the 111th time.
And you're still drunk.
Well,
you broke a rule. There's an unwritten rule in horse racing that racing journalists or journalists in general aren't really allowed to own good horses. you've broken the mould.
Yes, and I'm pleased to have done it. Somebody had to do it. it was a great day. I think he's a wonderful horse. I think that we're just getting an appreciation that he might be pretty good. And, you know, he did... there was the query over the mile. I think he dispatched that pretty well. He's a beauty.
Hey, Pat, just give us a quick sort of rundown. How did you get involved with this horse? Because I know you've been involved with several others in the McAvoy stable since he's gone out on his own the last few years.
Sure. My son, we've always had horses. And the kids would remember going to, say, the late Ray Lawson's place where we had a jumper called Big Devil who won in town. So they've always been associated with racehorses. And my son said, well, he'd like to get back into one. So I had a look at what Tony McAvoy had, and I purchased a bit of Concealer, who's now a three-year-old filly. If you remember, she finished second in the Blue Diamond Prelude last year.
So that's two good horses. You're really cheating now.
Yes, and Concealer won first up on Melbourne Cup Day. And I felt the rest of the family looked at me fairly glumly for not having embraced them. So I said, OK, well, we'll get a family horse. And we ended up with Haydock.
Hey, there's an interesting story that came out from Tony McAvoy in the Mounting Yard about he buys horses for nobody and they get advertised on his website, so there's no targeted ownership group or anything, and it's an all-in. And so you guys got involved, your family, and there's a crew of rapscallions from Hoppers Crossing who own 1% of 1/12 of 12% or something like
that. Fantastic, yeah.
And they were in the Mounting Yard and you were there, and there was probably a lot of people in the middle of all that as well. And one thing that I think Tony, and I think you as well, would have been most chuffed about was just the eclectic gathering of people in this one horse, and everyone was connected to this winner.
You wrote a very nice piece, Matt, on the weekend about that exact thing, and as a journalist, if I could have stepped outside, I think that was marvellous theatre what happened. And it's a great advertisement for racing that you can get into a very good horse very cheaply. And I can tell you firsthand, you have the time of your life.
Patrick. I was going to say, you've been a great fan and a lover of racing, but you've also been criticised by a lot of people within the industry because you're very forthright with your thoughts, especially on the whip rule and other things as well. Where do you see racing at the moment? And obviously, you've got such a great passion for it. How is it?
The health of racing seems pretty good. If you're talking specifically about the whip rule, we've seen a reduction in the use of the whip, so that's a positive. Are they using it too much? Yes, they are. I mean, I'm accused of being a hypocrite for that, for owning the racehorse and also criticising the whip. But, well, that's crazy. You can be a member of a football club, or you can be a member of a political party and rail against one of their policies. That doesn't mean you turn your back on the political party. It doesn't mean if you're anti-abortion, you're not a member of a religion. It's such a stupid argument. Of course you can be involved in racing, not enjoy or particularly like some of their practices.
Might be
but
a stupid
question. Doesn't mean you walk away from it.
Might be a stupid question then, Pat, but just one last thing. You, as Mike said, you've been outspoken on the use of the whip. Do you actually ask your jockey not to use the stick other than for reasons of control?
I tell the jockey nothing. I'm not in... I don't have the knowledge to share with the jockey. I don't tell the jockey not to. I wouldn't dare. That's the trainer's job.
And I know Luke Curry well. If you tell him to not use the whip on the horse, he'll use it on you. So. Yeah.
But you've got to say that Luke is very hands and heels.
Yeah.
He is not a whip rider. You know, when he won the CSAs, he wasn't touched by the whip.
Where to now? The good thing about this is that it's an ongoing story. I mean, you walked away thinking that this is my dream come true, but in racing, there's always the next fortnight. What's the go with the doc?
Well, I think the plan is now to give him a month off and run him in the Doncaster.
Is he a wet tracker?
Well, we've never seen him in the wet. So that's the plan at the moment. And the last spring, he ran really well off 4 week breaks. It was only that when he won the Bill Start that we backed him straight up into the Caulfield Guineas, because I think everybody was impressed by the Bill Start run, that we sort of broke that pattern. So I think that's the plan. Very exciting.
Mate, congratulations. Well done. It's every owner's dream to win a Group 1, especially at headquarters. Enjoy watching the replay.
Yeah, thanks, fellas.
Patrick Smith there. He has broken the cardinal rule that anyone in the media gets a good horse. But let's just talk about the horse. Forget about the ownership at the moment. He does have the potential, as when I spoke to Tony McAvoy, he could be a great weight for age sprinter miler over the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, he's just I think I said this 2 weeks ago on this show. He's the horse you want to own. He's uncomplicated, straightforward, can race off the pace, can sit handy, kicks when asked. Looks effective between 1200 and 1600. When I first came to Australia years ago, there were horses like Campaign King who were Group 1, 1200, 14, 16. Maybe Haydock could be a bit like that, or a more modern iteration, something like Happy Trails, who was able to keep going year after year at the top and get out to 2000.
He's got to make the transition from good 3 year old to wait for age, though. I mean, the Australian Guineas form often falls apart. We're not sure about this group. I mean, I think he's a good horse, and I hope for Patrick and the Hoppers Crossing crew and all the others that he is. And he's got that ability to... When a trainer talks about a horse that might become a weight-for-age horse, they have to... The qualities they usually have to have is they can race comfortably on the speed and kick.
And have a which is what he's got.
Yeah, exactly right. So he's got those things, but we have to see this transition of this form to weight-for-age.
If this form does fall apart, it'll basically condemn almost the entire three-year-old crop.
Often does. The Derby form can often be crap.
We've got the Derby runner-up. We've got the Caulfield Guineas trifecta went round in this race at the weekend.
But that's the point. All of that form can fall apart.
Well, it was a great run by Prized Icon, I suppose. Looking at some of those behind, it didn't seem that you wanted to be any further than a few off the fence making ground on Saturday. And he drew the perfect Barrier Haydock, and it was an on-pace dominated meeting.
Yep. It's funny things that you notice some weeks, but because maybe even in our role, Lynchy, because you're busy, you don't notice the thing that you noticed 2 weeks before. I was critical of the track 2 weeks ago. Was it 2 weeks ago? Yeah. Because there was a zone where you just couldn't, you know, it was a full rating point slower than the preferred zone. And I didn't particularly notice it. Richo noticed it yesterday when we were having a chat about it, as did Luke Curry, about that there was a section of the Flemington track close to the inside rail that was mown shorter than the rest of the track. And Mick Goody's probably got a very good explanation for this, in that there's a different grass profile there and he has to do something about it. And I remember walking the track with him once and he pointed out that there was a difference that they try to get rid of, but it's hard to, that you need to treat differently anyway. But I didn't particularly notice it as much on Saturday, but I, when driving in here, I got a phone call from three trainers who had runners at Flemington that were all saying, well, yet again, you get out to a certain part of the track and you are literally in a zone that you can't win from. And for the, and I'm not having a go at the track stuff here, I just think it, maybe it's a quirk of Flemington that's something we have to deal with, I don't know. But for our premier track to be the one where the most, put it this way, they all think Caulfield's racing fairer. And Flemington's our premier track. And more often than not, I just think we're going through a period with Flemington where this keeps coming up, you know. Maybe it'll evolve out of it, I don't know, but it certainly seems to be a recurring
thing. It's interesting
thing.
Over time how, go back a few weeks ago, and the only place you wanted to be down the straight was coming down the crown, the middle, but now everyone wants to get back to the rails, and other times it's to the outside. Now,
for
I don't
a big
know
spacious
that...
track to have such a limited lane seems to go against the notion of a big spacious track, doesn't it?
Well, yes, but if we can go back to the race just for a moment, Prized Icon, I thought, is this a horse that just seems to improve when he gets to Flemington, the big spacious track
seems
factor.
To.
I mean, it was a terrific run for a Derby winner at a mile, second up, getting ready for bigger fish to fry, as James Cummings said in Sydney. I would just love to see him brought back as a four-year-old and targeted at you know, the Melbourne Cup or something, in the way he seems to handle Flemington. Although James did say, didn't he, after the Derby win, sadly, that running and winning in a Melbourne Cup wouldn't do anything for his stud value.
Well, that's right. But I think we've all been around long enough to know that the hope that a Derby horse will go on to be a Cups horse is, it just doesn't, it rarely happens. It just rarely happens. So.
It's a long time, hasn't it? Outside of, obviously, the winner, I thought the runs of the race with Anaheim was brilliant, looking ahead to a Derby in Sydney. Harlow Gold was great, although she, again, made a lot of the ground up the inside.
So Stinson, did the third place getter.
Stinson ran out of his skin.
But he came up that same patch.
Yep.
So.
And Inside Agent, unfortunately, has suffered a fairly severe injury out of the
two,
race. I think he's
two
got
screws in
he's got a fractured knee. Mm. Yeah, so best of luck for
just a quick
him.
One. I did get Emily from the VRC just said, yeah, well, they're going to attempt to work out this issue with the bookies. I think that the bookies actually, at some they were given a couple of options and they requested where they are, but it certainly doesn't seem to be the preferred spot for them now. But good to see the VRC's aware of this issue.
Got to agree with you, Harlow Gold. I met one of her legion of owners on the train, a delightful young lady from Queensland who'd flown down just for the day on Saturday, and she was very excited to have a runner in this Group 1, and I think they all have got a lot of upside to look forward to with this filly when the trips get longer.
Outside of the Group 1 guineas, G. Heatherly was super impressive, and what a lovely ride on Heatherly from Damien Lane. I know he was $1.80 favourite, but just the way he rated her in front, she is going to take a power of beating when they head up to Sydney.
She's actually up for auction.
Yeah, she's in the broodmare sale because she's bled once, so they want to have a bit of a bet each way, you know, just in case she does it again, perhaps, and if she'd done it again on Saturday. So they have the option of selling her either as a broodmare or, who knows, a horse like her. She could probably win some decent money if she was sold to the United States, where they can use all sorts of medications on bleeders.
But she was the first leg of a moral double yesterday. The only sad thing is that the second leg lost.
Oh, don't talk to me about Medinity.
She missed it. She's just got that little habit of missing the start. But once the inside rail, you know, if you draw barrier one up the straight, sometimes it's the wrong spot. But because it was the right spot, she was the greatest moral ever, Heatherly, on Saturday. But so was Medinity.
Well, Medinity, I'm sorry to everyone out there who backed her, but I had to go in for a large multi, so that's what happened.
She melted,
I know. But $1.45 in the end. And David Hayes said it in a pre-race interview that he was concerned with her pre-race, and you could see her behind the barriers. But And there's a lot of talk about the ride, whether she was held up too much or whether she should have been allowed to maybe extend in the mid-race.
I get a bit tired of that argument these days. It's,
they're trying to educate her to hold her up anyway.
There's
as well.
So many reasons why horses are held up to certain sectors of the
Well, there's a lot of talk about that and also about Dwayne Dunn on Hooked earlier in the day as well. They say maybe he sat too pretty. So
well,
this
I've
is all
tried
what's
to explain
on
a bit of that in the paper today. But Dina did look like she was running downhill. She was that overreaching and she lost her action about three or four times. She melted. She's over the top. Isn't that what we take out of it? She's had a gutful.
Well, it looks
you wouldn't
that
want to
way,
back her in a slipper.
But you know what? The filly that actually came and swooped late from the Hayes camp to win the race, she might, you know, be pretty useful herself. I mean, it takes a pretty good filly to win a listed race first up down the straights at Flemington, doesn't it?
22nd individual or 22nd two-year-old winner for the season from the Hayes Dabernick Hayes camp and 13th individual. It's a remarkable performance. Outside of that, The Answer, My Friend, was another heartbreak story for a lot of punters in the last. And that win of Mr. Sneaky, Matty, was really the only one that made grand on the day. But, again, they went pretty hard early with The Answer, My Friend. I thought it was a phenomenal performance just to get beaten.
When you get a track that's got a certain pattern early in the day, obviously it turns later in the day because they all ride to it and then it sets up for a little bit of a switch around. So,
Having said that, Luke Curry should have known all about the track bias. He'd won the previous two races. He was on The Answer, My Friend, wasn't he?
I can't remember.
In the race book, which I've got in front of me, was
that day for McAvoy to 800 days, big memory on top of.
Could you imagine a big memory and Rising Romance had both won on the same day?
Oh, call for the doctor.
Anyone with Time Awaits in the Cinderella in Adelaide. And Luke Curry, I heard him with the Brekkie Bush this morning, to complete a massive 3 or 4 days for him. His mum trained a 100-to-1 winner down in Tassie.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
And Master Reset gave it a peach of a ride in the Cranbourne Cup on Friday as well. So, gee, what a weekend for Luke Curry. SMSs are coming through thick and fast. Matty, it's turf variables. There will always be variables. You've got to understand that. Inference could be a superstar. We're going to take a break and talk about the Sydney
Michelle
racing.
Payne's, a couple of tweets here from Michelle. Which?
What does she say?
Well, she's very forthright, as always. Maybe Mick is suggesting that the track managers should be more accountable, let's just say. And I won't read that one out in full. It's not very nice to upset people, but I've been there many times at a premier track, walked it, and felt like going home. So,
well, look, and I've spoken to Mick Goody a number of times. He wants me to come out and walk the track, which is 100% reasonable because I know nothing about tracks. Matty, you said you know nothing about tracks, and that's why I want to get the experts like Mick Goody to come in here and explain it. Mick says he won't come in until I come out and walk the track. I'm going to be doing that in the next week or two, so hopefully then we can get Mick Goody in because this is 3 weeks in a row for Flemington. Fingers crossed we get the track
racing
well.
I don't understand that's a requirement, but anyway, if that's what the demand is.
It is worth doing, though. I've done those track walks a couple of times with Mick Goody and the staff, and it's just a bit of an education. It's also an eye-opener when you see how far down the straight is when you turn into the straight, you know.
We're going to take a short break. You're listening to The Verdict. On the other side, we're going to discuss the races in Sydney, Chautauqua, Tommy Berry's ride, and talking about the Twitter sphere. It blew up on Saturday.
RSN 927's Racing Pulse presents The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. SMS is coming through. I like this one. The Verdict, where Mick Lynch talks a lot of sense and Matty just talks a lot.
Well, I'll endorse that, but it wasn't anything to do with it.
Clint Hutchinson's tweeted in before, Hong Kong is the perfect environment to compare world riders. Best from Europe have gone there for years. None have come close to Marrera on what you're talking about, Mickey Lynch. We're going to be doing some work
but
with
they're
Hutchie
not tested on
too.
Different tracks in different circumstances in Hong Kong. I think that's the point.
Yeah, I think that there's an element of that. Also, if Marrera's based there full-time, he's got the ins with the right stables. If a bloke's parachuting in from Europe for a big weekend, you know, he's not quite the same links. Final word on Joe Marrera, brilliant achievement. He's still got some to go. Sir Gordon Richards, not the Adelaide trainer, but a famous old jockey in England, once rode 12 winners in a row, spread over 2 days, of course. But
there you go.
Pretty phenomenal. October 1933.
And you were there.
No, I wasn't. My dad wouldn't even have been there.
He wasn't there. He was at the soccer.
Yeah. Winkers has tweeted in or texted in, Inference is the best middle distance galloper in Australia, arguably could be undefeated. I was very annoyed with the Tab app blew up on Saturday. Any reason why? No, but we will put in a call to the Tab and try and find out if we don't get the answer today.
There was an issue with a server.
Okay. All right. There you go. And there was some power issues in the Wangaratta Cup Day yesterday as well that put back the races. Speaking of Inference, well, let's talk overall Sydney. I'm amazed that they got to run on Saturday. And at the end of the day, I think it was kudos to everyone that they got through the meeting.
Funny thing was, track managers call it accurately. And Navesh is a great track manager who's got a difficult job because he lives in a monsoonal region of the world. They called it a heavy nine. It was a heavy nine the day before. Then they got Armageddon, and then it was still a heavy nine. And I got Paul Snowden on the radio on Saturday morning. He said, "You're kidding, Archer. This is as wet as it could possibly be. It's a heavy 15, whatever the highest rating is." So. And then it looked
like Noah might have kept the boat in the stable, actually, at the weekend.
Oh, sure. And then it created an unavoidable... You know, when you get that much rain, there's always going to be some pattern that's going to fall to the inside, so the outside's going to be better. And then it created this vastly compromised racetrack where there was a lane to get to. And
what do you do with the format of it?
That's what I'm saying. I think everything comes with an asterisk. We were talking on Autumn Insiders yesterday about this superstar Randwick Guineas winner and Michael Hawke saying that that's how good the horse is. He's either that good and won despite the bias, or he was accentuated by the bias. So I just think you need to see them all again. You couldn't come out of that meeting with a firm conviction about She Will Reign, about Chautauqua, about this and that, because it was just so unfair.
We spoke to Gary Portelli this morning. She's pulled up well. Everything is onwards to the Golden Slipper. Do you now have a question mark over her heading into the Slipper?
Only a bog track run.
Well, if she had a bit of a gut buster, if that had, if there's not sufficient time to
recover. She ran really, really well. She just didn't win.
Who would you rather be on after Saturday? Hootson, who won with a leg in the air carrying 63, or She Will Reign?
Dunno. Can't answer it.
I quite still like Catchy, actually. I think she would have shortened in price by just eating a double helping of feed and not moving out of her box. And if they're all having, if She Will Reign's having a tough run on a bog track and Catchy's got the 3 weeks to get over the diamond and then straight into it, it can't do her any harm.
You saw the Mellum nightmare, and it was the same with Tommy Berry. He's on She Will Reign. And the winner just had the simple play of getting to the zone and just coming with one run, whereas Mellum had to spend half the race trying to gently get to the right part of the track.
But you know what's interesting? Tommy Berry walked the track and he declared, he told the stewards, the stewards tweeted out the outside. We spoke to him this morning. He said he thought it was a soft 7 compared to a heavy 9 or 10. Why aren't the other jockeys walking the track and finding that out?
Interesting that maybe they did, but they just didn't alert the stewards publicly like Tommy Berry did.
But no one else in that first race, other than Tommy Berry, said, "I'm going straight to the outside."
Maybe he's just smarter than
That made it more explainable what he did in Chautauqua. He knew exactly where the best ground was, but he knew that there was a disadvantage on that horse in trying to get there. And that if
did you think it was a good ride or a bad ride?
Great ride.
Yeah, I thought so.
No, I had no problems with it. I think he rode brilliantly, really, throughout the day, didn't he?
He was dealt an awkward hand, and he dealt with it the best way he could in real time, in real circumstances, when, there's no right or wrong when you're thinking, well, you're not to know that you're going to be beaten a short half head. If he'd tracked around with Haraki and they're all jamming to the outside rail, the effort to get there was one thing, and then also, what's to say that they didn't jam up down the outside rail and he didn't get a clear crack at them anyway? And just one little thing that Luke Curry said on the TV yesterday, which I thought was interesting, he said, if you've got a horse who's comfortable through the ground, going through the inferior ground is not as big a disadvantage for a horse who's got a nice rhythm through it as one who chops and changes through it,
Well, Tommy Berry, I thought he gave perfect reasoning when I spoke to him this morning before 9 o'clock, which you wouldn't have listened to, Matty. He said that he had to make up a lot of ground between the 600 to the 400, and that's why he didn't want to go wide, because he thought he'd already burned up a fair bit of petrol. And I asked him, did you expect to be that far behind? He said, I just do whatever Chautauqua wants me to do.
That's the point. Yeah. That's the point. And this is where I seem to be continually at war with the very mathematically based punters who are all on social media, and good on them. They've got their own theories and lots of stuff. But I don't there's things that they don't seem to take into account. And one is the quirks of the animal. Like they say, well, he should have been 2 lengths closer. Well, try putting Chautauqua 2 lengths closer and see what happens. He won't do it. You can't make him. You know, Zenyatta was the same.
It's not a science, it's an art. And, you know, we're not on these horses. We don't know what they're communicating through the reins, through their gait, through the way they are running. And, you know, you have to just trust the judgment of the bloke on top. And if you get top three or four jockeys, generally they get it righter far more than they get it wrong. If Chautauqua's head was what, in front before the post, then after?
And his head was in front 50 metres before, too.
That's right. I mean, you know, he gets a different bob of the head. No one's criticising.
I think one thing that does come out of it is that Chautauqua's back. A lot of people had written his obituary, but that was a stellar performance.
Doesn't mean he's not Chautauqua still. And what I mean by that is he's always going to be beaten. For every time he wins, he's going to get rolled. Mm-hmm. He's got beaten his last four starts. You know, he got beaten again because of his quirks.
Gee, what's going to be... This George Ryder is going to be fascinating with...
Well, Winks will bolt him.
Well, he can't give Winks a start, which is probably what's going to
but he
be
will.
Occurring.
But he'll be 8 lengths.
But it'll be interesting... he's changed. 8 lengths now.
No, but... Well,
2 weeks ago, Hartnell was going to get beaten a half a length.
Well, think about what happened in the Canterbury Stakes. He was 6 lengths from the second last horse at 1,300 metres. Well, Winks...
I don't think he'll beat it, but it's going to be fascinating
well, how
to
far
see...
Off, but if that's his racing style, well, how far off him do you think
she'll race handy enough. She'll race as handy as Hughie Bowman wants her to race, get first run, and he'll have too much ground to make up, you would think.
It'll be a non-race because of the racing styles of both horses. He'll never get within Kooi enough to make it interesting. Even as great as he is, he's just not going to be able to make a race of it with it. How can he?
Gee, it's still going to be mouthwatering to watch. If Tommy had won by the bob of the head, he would now be ranked as a brain surgeon. That's come through on the SMSs.
I don't want a jockey operating on my brain.
I thought it was a sensational ride on Chautauqua on Saturday, even though it hurt my pocket. I've no doubt Tommy Berry rides and understands the horse much better than Dwayne Dunn. I think Dwayne Dunn rides him well here. There's an argument to be made that the horse just goes better the Sydney way of going.
I reckon he does. The Hawkses don't agree, but I reckon he goes better in Sydney.
Okay, and this is an SMS that's come through. Should the stewards have been obligated to enter a protest on behalf of the connections of the answer, my friend, in the last race for over-whip use by Williams, who was subsequently fined?
Well, look, old chestnut.
I would have liked to have seen the second horse win for financial gains. But, gee, it was an interesting day for Craig Williams because we don't often see Craig Williams or hear Craig Williams getting fined
up. I hope you sleep well at night,
I don't know how you can sleep well at night. That's very unlike Craig Williams, but it just shows the pressure and the heat of the moment.
And I think a lot of the time the jockeys feel that the stewards don't see a race through the same eyes that they do and maybe get the interpretation wrong. Can I just bring up something that happened early in the day at Flemington? Yeah. The protest? I went into the protest hearing.
I was in there too.
It was interesting, wasn't it? A couple of things came up. One of them was, and this is me being a fool, because I sort of thought the short half head was sort of a nose and they were both the same sort of margin, that you couldn't get a shorter margin than a short half head. You can. But the actual developed print that went up on the screen, and this is important because a lot of protests can hinge on the absolute margin, not the defined margin. It looked like a half head to me. It was such a clear margin between the two horses. So anyway, Robbie Lang sought clarification, and the definition of a short half head is when it comes down the eye line to the nose. So you've got a massive snout that's still a short half head. But I assume that was a half head, but anyway, the shorter one.
Well, it was dismissed pretty quickly.
Yeah,
though,
but
wasn't
the argument was interesting with the tractor marks down the track with the maintenance work.
Yeah.
The horse that was allegedly interfered with and run off its line, it was always on the tractor tyre mark line and never deviated off it. And that went in Lang's favour. Was he said, well, hang on a minute. If it got bumped sideways, how come it didn't get bumped off that tractor tyre mark?
Yeah, that was Invincible Heart. Craig knew it. And you're right. If you saw the head on, it didn't deviate that much at all.
Mm. Just some SMSs coming through the profix.com. Anyone who walked the track prior to race day knew it was going to suit the leaders. It's open for those who wish to do so. Now, we had a bit of a discussion about this. The general public, are they able to get onto the track and walk the track before a Saturday Metropolitan meeting?
I think MRC's fine with it. I'm not sure. I know Werribee had a problem with it because they didn't let a professional
That was track. A discussion we had. Changing track conditions. This is again from the profix.com.au. This is what we get with the RV's good for policy. If we're happy to race on a good three to firm, there would be no track bias. Not too sure. It's interesting about that. It's a bit of an old chestnut. Matty Stewart, get in touch with Andrew Martin and ask him to teach you how to pronounce Hauraki correctly. Not sure whether I've done that correctly either. We're going to take our final break and we'll be back to wrap things up on The Verdict.
RSN 927's Racing Pulse presents The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. Only a minute and a half to go, gents. Before we finish, I did want to once again mention the tragic situation with Rhianna Thompson, the young 22-year-old who lost her life after a fall at track work. We spoke to Tommy Berry about it as well, and the condolences to the family and all those who are doing it tough in Canberra. A nice tribute from Tommy Berry, who we know who's been through a similar situation with his brother Nathan. But Mick, it's just such a tragic situation, and for a young girl to lose her life on the track, it gives a stark reminder as to how dangerous the sport is once again.
Absolutely, and it's something we touched on in the debate covering tactics today. You don't know what it's like till you're riding them. You don't know the feel they give you. They're unpredictable animals, they're flighty animals, and it's a very dangerous trade. And unfortunately, this young lady, and it's one of a number of women who've been in the forefront, sadly, in the casualties that we've seen in track work accidents in recent years.
It's just another reminder why everyone should be donating their time and money to the National Jockeys Trust, who helps those who have fallen and the families of those who have paid the ultimate sacrifice in racing. Almost at 10 o'clock, boys. Looking forward to this weekend, Super Saturday at Flemington. It's going to be a magical weekend. I'm going to put you on the spot, both of you. I know we're 4 or 5 days out. Mick Lynch and Matty Stewart, give me the Newmarket Australian Cup winners.
Newmarket, I'm barracking for the story. I want one of the first uppers to win. Quarterback, Redkirk Warrior or Voodoo Lad.
Gee.
I'm hoping same things. Poor old Bryce Hayes has been that stiff with Spieth. He's not well handicapped relatively, but I'm hoping that he can win. And I was thinking, oh, yeah, it's a pretty close awesome rock up. But me mate's back. It's Awesome Rock, and we can get revenge on... Has Waller got one in it? No.
I don't know. This time of year, though, Australian Cup, Team Williams, they always target Flemington in October and November, Flemington in March. United States.
Interesting that the word coming out of the Weir stable is that they're not going to put any gear changes on Huraki, no blinkers.
Humidor.
Huraki.
Well, they wouldn't want to try it on Huraki because it's not their horse.
That wraps up The Verdict for today. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Tomorrow, make sure you tune in. I got the chance to have a chat to Nick Collum when he was out at the sales for Racing's Open Mic. What a fascinating life he has led. Of course, the owner of Kortsa, Impazira and Tristark. That's coming up tomorrow after 9 o'clock on Racing's Open Mic. Enjoy the day.
Do you sell stuff on Amazon, eBay, BigCommerce, your own website? Then you need ShipStation, a popular choice of online sellers across Australia. No matter where you sell, ShipStation automatically imports your orders, making them easier to manage. Plus, they help you get the lowest rates from all the top carriers, including Australia Post. Now you can try ShipStation free for 30 days. Plus, get a special bonus when you use the code SHIPPING. To learn more, go to ShipStation.com, click on the microphone and enter shipping.